Blog Talk Radio.
A Monday warrior, mean, mean stride. Today's Tom Sawyer, mean, mean pride.
Good afternoon on the East Coast, good morning on the West Coast, and a great day to you wherever, and oh, by the way, whenever you may be listening. My name is Jason Dias, broadcasting live from the studios of eloquentonline.net in beautiful New Braunfels, Texas, Republic thereof, and a really long walk, but a short flight on the Millennium Falcon. His name is Tough Talkin' Troy Hall, the toughest talkinist chief operating officer in the history of financial services. Hey, Troy, how you doing?
I am doing wonderful. And as you know, I am about ready to attend a financial conference here in Charlotte, North Carolina.
Yes, you are. Troy is on the road today, going one state north to Charlotte, North Carolina, from his home in Charleston, South Carolina. I was thinking about this when you said that you were at a conference, watching the Twitter feed today. Do you remember what it was like when we had conferences and nobody tweeted out the hashtags and stuff like that?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I can even remember when there was no mobile phones.
I thought about that today.
It was two tin cans and a string. Yeah, I remember that.
I know. I was thinking about that when you said that you're out there. Today we're going to talk about strategic planning as it existed in 1993. Today my wife is on the campus of the University of Texas at San Antonio for her job, doing like a community fair and stuff like that. In the fall of 1993, I was a student in my final semester of studies at the University of Texas at San Antonio. I graduated in December of 1993. So in September of 1993, I was just getting going in the fall semester. And Troy, I got to tell you, when I look back on it, one of the things that's always been kind of a hamstring for me is I've always lived my life as a historian. In 1993, I lived my life thinking not about the life I was living in 1993, but what it was going to mean 10, 15, 20 years ahead. And I'll be very honest with you. 1993 is one of the most complicated years I've ever experienced. I'm about to graduate from college in December, and I'm looking around going, where are the flying cars? Where are the supercomputers? Where are the robots? Where are all these things that I was promised with Star Wars and Star Trek? And am I really going to graduate from a major university with a degree and have to type out my resume and mail it out to prospective employers? It was kind of like the expectation did not meet the reality in 1993. You know what I'm talking about.
I do. And actually, little did you know that you were 7 years away from an entire worldwide meltdown with Y2K. I mean, did you know.
Exactly. I did not know.
I had no idea that we were going to totally melt down, that the world was not going to exist, that you were close to the – you probably hadn't even thought about the Mayan calendar.
I had never even heard of it.
Probably didn't think of much about it. Yeah, it's crazy stuff, isn't it?
Well, you know, by the way,
I don't think you're a historian. If you were thinking about the future, wouldn't you be a futuratorian?
Maybe a futurist. I don't know. I spoke to my mom and dad this weekend. My dad was admitted to the hospital down in Universal City. He's fine. And had a little issue. Heart stuff. He thought he had some chest pains. It turned out it was just some muscle skeletal stuff, as it often is.
Okay.
He's fine,
right.
Healthy and raring and ready to go. But we had a nice time to visit on Saturday afternoon. And my mom told me, she goes, you know, Jason, you were always living in the future. She said, I remember when you were in sixth grade telling me that nothing I'm doing in class, in Miss Corrigan's sixth grade class at Crestview Elementary, is going to help me in my next job interview. And my mom was saying, Jason, I didn't even know you knew what a job interview was. You know, I don't even know how you conceived of what it meant to, you know, you have to remember in 1993, there's no monster.com. There's no internet. The internet is actually invented at CERN Technologies in England in 1993. The world that we know today is a science fiction fantasy in the fall of 1993. But what is absolutely true, even though you and I weren't part of it, Troy, credit union professionals were meeting in boardrooms and hotel rooms and hotel ballrooms and, you know, serving coffee and tea and muffins and things like that, and spending 8, 16, 24 hours in a week talking about how do we get from here to our next strategic objective. And I wanted to go back in time and, you know, kind of ask you, what was Troy Hall doing in the fall of 1993? Do you remember?
Well, in 1993, I was raising a 13-year-old and an 8-year-old, and I was going to every soccer game that anyone could ever imagine in their entire life, and every musical performance that had anything to do with cheerleading, dance, whatever. So my entire life at that moment was wrapped up around my kids, which I don't regret. I don't mean to make it sound like I'm regretting it, but really where I was from there. From a business perspective, I was actually in the aspect of this is when I was running a marketing and advertising agency. This is when I first began to I had a little bit of introduction with credit union, and so and it just started right then. One of our clients that I had picked up was a credit union client, so I began to understand a little bit more about the world of credit unions, because prior to that, I had a very strong commercial banking background. So,
right.
But even with my commercial banking background, I do have to tell you that they never, ever thought of credit unions as the enemy at that point in time,
not as harshly as
what I have experienced in the last decade, all of a sudden, like the bankers just all of a sudden woke up and said, oh my goodness, the 3% market share that you have compared to my 97%, I need to get. So, mm-hmm. You know, you're bad. So
well,
it's crazy.
I'll tell you, you know, you talked about that. I think one of the reasons I'm feeling a little sentimental and looking back into the past is in that year, 1993, as often the case, and I'm sure when you look back on it, you say, man, what if I had done something different? Had I not picked the schedule of classes that I had picked on Tuesdays and Thursdays in 1993 as I rounded out my college experience, I might not have met the young lady that would ultimately become my wife. I might not have had the one single tax deduction that is my beloved son, Evan. You mentioned the 13-year-old. I cannot believe in less than 3 weeks, I will have a teenager under the roof here of my tastefully appointed home in New Braunfels, Texas, Republic thereof. My son, who is a wonderful and beautiful child of God, attending Cross Lutheran Church and School here in New Braunfels, Texas, woke up this morning. He had an orthodontist appointment early this morning, so he was up very, very early. And I'm getting out of bed, and I'm walking out, you know, and getting the coffee ready. I was like, hey, man, you ready to roll? He goes, yeah, I just got to update to iOS 7. iOS 7 came out today,
yeah.
So I update my iPad.
That's
and I'm
right.
Like,
yeah.
Whoa. I said, well, do I need to do that? He's like, Dad, I know you would like to upgrade to iOS 7, but iOS 7 is not available to people like you that are still toting around the original iPad. So apparently I cannot update to iOS 7.
You cannot update? That's right. You are getting, I mean, you and your flip phone, so I'm not really sure about that. But you know, I want to focus a little bit on the strategic planning. And we kind of went to this nostalgic kind of to set some framework for where we were and what we were doing. But, you know, looking from strategic planning from that time in 1993 to what I am engaged in doing today for strategic planning is worlds apart.
It is.
From
it is.
What was
it,
actually happening.
It is. It is absolutely worlds apart. In 1993, we sent up the space shuttle to fix the Hubble telescope, and it was a big deal. It was science fiction come real life, and I don't know. We're going to talk about that today, folks. We're going to talk about strategic planning in 1993. What did we not know about in 1993 when we sat down in our, you know, Hilton and Marriott ballrooms, in boardrooms, in our, you know, fake leather chairs at the credit union headquarters, and tried to figure out what is our strategic plan 5, 10 years going forward? Or have we reached a point now, based upon that experience, that the entire concept of strategic planning is just irrelevant? Do we not need to embrace a flexible response where we simply say we're going to allocate money and funds to the things that we've always done, but we're going to be ready for whatever is next? When we sat down to do strategic planning in 1993, the only internet browser out there was something called Mosaic. It had a lifespan about 10 minutes, and nobody really knew that we were on the precipice of a new frontier that did not grow by quarters and months and annual reports, that was about to just entirely blow up exponentially in what became the greatest exchange of information and awareness based upon the World Wide Web that we have ever experienced in our human history. So we're going to talk about that today. But before we get there, we do this show every week. Sometimes we comment on national events or pop culture and things like that. I must tell y'all, we had Sarah Cook on the show, and she spends a lot of time driving up from Northern Virginia into Washington. We had this very unfortunate situation on Monday. I think it was Monday in D.C. at the Naval Yards. This another shooting, right? I want to tell y'all something now. Troy, as you know, you, like me, you're a child of God. You're a Christian gentleman. You know as well as I do, confession is good for the soul.
I agree. Confession.
I'm going to tell y'all something right now.
I want you to – do you have your rosary with you?
I'm kind of a Reformed Catholic.
I couldn't help
Catholic.
It. I just went there, you know.
Oh, I've had a rosary in my life. It's funny you say that. My like I said, I've got a 13-year-old tax deduction that has a cross-country meet this Saturday at Tree of Life Church here in New Braunfels, Texas, Republic thereof, and half of his team is going to be missing because they're going to be at confirmation class. When I was doing my confirmation when I was 13 years old, I got a sterling silver rosary from my parents that I cherished for many, many years until I gave it away to a Contra rebel on the Nicaragua-Honduras border back in 1988. But what I want to talk about right now is the situation in D.C. and why I would have handled it very differently. Whether I was 16 years old working at Jack in the Box on Walsham Road in San Antonio, Texas, or at Endicott Johnson Shoe Store at Windsor Park Mall, or at Harland Clark Check Printers in 1999, or at Wells Fargo Northwest Banks in 1999, if you rolled up on me and wanted to order a jumbo jack or buy a pair of shoes or open an account, I'm going to make a confession right now. Since I was 16 years old, I have always, always, always carried a gun. I am not a police officer. It goes without saying, when I was in the Army, I always had, you know, weapons and stuff like that readily available to me. But as a civilian, there has never been a moment in my life where I have not been carrying a gun. And this advice, it may be worth as much to you as it's costing you to hear it. People, you better wake up and figure this out. There are bad and evil people in this world. And I am not going to be the guy eating lunch in some cafeteria at the Naval Yards in D.C. and get shot down by some loser from Fort Worth, Texas. I am an accomplished and award-winning marksman here in Texas. I have kind of rotated through different kinds of handguns in my life. I've shot competitively since I was 18 years old. And if you want to figure out how to survive the next workplace shooting, make sure you're the person who can shoot back. I know it's not politically correct. I know in the wake of all these things, for the first time ever, Troy, I'm just going to say it. If this offends you and you're listening to the show and you never listen again, I'm sorry. I cannot believe when these things happen, we still have people like our president who come out and say, we need more gun control. Sometimes I feel like I'm living in an alternative universe. I live in Texas. Here's what I want you to know about me. Jason Dias, the creative, chief creative officer at Eloquent Online. If you think that I am some redneck, gun-toting, Bible-thumping Christian from New Braunfels, Texas, Republic thereof, that is exactly who I am.
Well, it's interesting when you describe yourself in this particular way or when you describe this situation. Sometimes I think that we're going to connect the dots here and be able to actually bring this scenario into the fold of strategic planning and how this works. And so our listeners just need to hang in with us a little bit longer because the dots will connect. And I'm going to bring together some things that you set out there in that scenario. A couple of things is obviously the issue in the country regarding regulation, legislation, gun control, whether it's right, wrong, powers to be. These are issues we never dealt with in 1993. And it's not that they were not there. It's just they were not as highly publicized. And not only were they not highly publicized, but their frequency was so much further apart that you had an opportunity to forget about them. So one of the things that, like you talked about before from 1993, was I don't think we ever really experienced an opportunity for the technology impact that we were going to see. I believe that what occurred for strategic planning in 1993 was really a conservative approach to business. It was always based on the past. It was based on trying to predict something. There were a few companies who were potential mavericks who could kind of go out there and say, I see a little bit more about where the future is, so therefore I kind of want to plant myself. We've talked about Apple before, and so I don't want to get into the whole Apple thing, but basically very innovative companies. So you would expect an innovative company to be more futuristic in the way they think. But for most of
Absolutely.
Us, everyday folks, we don't think about it. I don't
we
think
did not.
For me in my life, I should have a gun. I should be the one learning how to shoot. I should be the
and
one
I, and
shooting
I don't
back.
Mean to
I mean,
be,
I don't think about that.
Yeah,
so
and I don't mean to
me,
be crazy. The whole thing happened on Monday. And, hey, listen, folks, this is not the gun control show or the pro-gun control show or whatever it is, pro-gun ownership show. This is the Power Performance, the show that asks the question, if your brand were a band, would you leave the audience wanting more? And a lot of times, leaving the audience wanting more requires thoughtful preparation of the future and the strategic planning that it takes to get there. Every week you tune in, you hear from Troy, who is probably goes through this process every year, strategic planning, and we're going to figure out how we can look back on the past that was and what we should have learned from it going forward and some of the hot trends coming up in banking. I'm going to ask Troy what he thinks about them. I'm going to ask Troy how he thinks we get to a market share greater than that 3%. With thoughtful and strategic planning, and we'll do it all right after this.
Man, when I'm listening to The Power of Performance, I just can't decide who's hotter, Jason or Troy.
Well, you can tell by the way I use my voice, I'm a woman, man. No time to talk.
I just love how she says my name.
I do, too. She does seem to favor you.
Well,
I know she puts a lot of inflection on your name.
Yes,
I'm not sure.
Well, she does.
Well, you're back. You're back on the Power Performance.
Here's what I want to say, though. Before you move to some of this other stuff, I want to talk about the scenario one more time here, because what it is. And so what is happening in strategic planning today that is much more prevalent than it was before is scenario planning. So basically what you set up was a scenario. And so realistically, folks get out there and listen to you saying, well, I think you should do this or you should do that. But the reality is that realistically, in scenario planning, you should try to figure out what would happen if this and this, if this and that occurred, what would the quadrant look like for the this and that? And so there's four quadrants. And so what you would do is you would look at each of those and you would say, oh, is it likely that this would happen or that would happen? And what are the conditions that make that real? And that is the value in strategic planning today that was maybe a process that may not have been as strongly used in the past. So, and that's what I think you paint is, there are potential scenarios today that we now have to plan for that we never had to plan for before. We never had to worry about being attacked on our own soil, unless, of course, we did it ourselves through the Civil War, or the bombing in Pearl Harbor. But Pearl Harbor, when you think about it, was in Hawaii, and it was so far from the mainland, most folks can disassociate with it because they weren't close. But when we had the attacks on New York and on Washington, it brought things home, and it brought a sense of security, the fact that I'm not going to be as secure as maybe as I once was. I have to start thinking of all types of security, and especially with the internet, you have cybersecurity that you think about. So these scenarios, and so what you talk about is, it's scenario planning, and that is a very important aspect of strategic planning. And I want to make sure we make that point before you go on with talking
about these other brands and other things that are happening. And it's worth noting that it was also in 1993, it was the first time we had the attack on the World Trade Centers, those knuckleheads that rented the van and tried to blow up the World Trade Center by detonating a bomb in the parking garage. One of the things that interests me about 1993 was it was the first time that we really saw generational issues affecting the American electoral system. The parity of the baby boomer generation for the first time overwhelmed the traditional voters, and we have the spectacle of a stone-cold World War II hero, a president, President Bush, the first President Bush, who enjoyed an 88% approval rating in 1991, going down to defeat from a little-known governor from Arkansas, a baby boomer, Bill Clinton. And I think one of the things that we have to focus on today in strategic planning is, who is our target audience? I've said this many times on the show that I thought Generation Y was an overstudied generation, and I believe the next 5 to 6 years, the best way to improve your brand is to train and inspire your people to intentionally engage the baby boomers that have the majority of the assets and the deposits and the property and the need for Harley Davidson loans and second home loans and stuff like that. As a guy that is actively involved in the strategic vision of your brand, South Carolina Federal Credit Union, what would you say to people who think, hey, the baby boomers, they're just old people. They don't matter to us anymore.
Well, you know, the one thing I will tell you, that the closer I get to 70, it certainly looks a lot better.
Well, you're nowhere close to 70.
I would say that, you know, first of all, that, you know, age is relative to where you are in life. I think that, again, the issue is, the reason that there's so much emphasis placed on Gen Y is because Gen Y is the next baby boomer group to be influential in this country. So what's happening is that folks are realistically, they're really displacing the baby boomer emphasis to the Gen Y group, because they realize that they really didn't maximize the baby boomer group at all, because they didn't take them serious. So it was still the traditionalist kind of approach until the baby boomers came in and actually took over. So having companies be more prepared about Gen Y would actually be that they would be in a stronger position as opposed to being a reactionary, they'll be proactive to it. I don't believe that any company would seriously look at a demographic market. They should be looking at their demographics, and they should seriously exclude a strong force. And so with that being said, I would assume that a company that really wanted to stay in business would be tapping in to the baby boomer market. But when I speak very strongly about the need for the Gen Y group, I speak about it because it is the next largest influential group that will shape what is happening in this country and in the world.
Well, it is going
to do so at the speed of light. You see, we did not do it as baby boomers in the speed of light. We did it as a rock rolling down a hill. This group is absolutely hitting from 0 to 60 in 4 seconds. And it's because the world is so much more connected. And why is it more connected? Gee, it's something you talked about earlier, the web. The internet, the connectivity,
exactly.
The transfer of information occurs within seconds.
We get
so irritated and upset if our phone takes or our computer takes a couple of extra seconds to warm up or for that program because you see the little thing spinning now. Do you know why the little spinning thing was designed? It was so that the rest of us wouldn't keep hitting the enter button 55 times and causing the computer to stay even longer in a spinning mode.
Which I'm still guilty of doing, by
the
way.
People would say, hey, something's happening. So let's not touch another button, okay, until that happens. So
It is absolutely right. Whether it's mobile banking or anything else, everything has its, I think, honestly, its genesis back in 1993, where the guys out at CERN in England and then later at the University of Illinois decided to publish this Mosaic browser, giving physicists and scientists the ability to share information immediately across what became known as the World Wide Web, whether it's depositing a check by taking a picture of it with your smartphone. It all goes back to this amazing, groundbreaking technology that did not exist for people like you and me growing up in America, circa 20th century, middle-class Americans. And I guess the $60,000 question is, Troy, are credit unions, are they missing anything that's coming next based upon that online and social technology?
Well, I don't think yes, they are missing it because there are a number of credit unions who are within a very small framework and a small structure who don't have the resources to command for some of these items, because it's not just getting the web, but once you do, it's all of this infrastructure and security that has to be in place in order to make sure that the member data is actually protected. What I think that credit unions are missing out on more than anything else is the collaboration that they can have by joining forces together. It is a cooperative movement, but yet we still isolate ourselves because we believe that individually we can do it better than if we work together as a group. It is the strangest thing in my entire life. And again, the only reason why I know this happens and why I know that it can exist is because I said this before, we are an individualistic culture, and we have implanted in this individualistic culture a collective idea. Credit unions are a collective idea, but we are run by people who are individualists. And so we might have some desire for the common good of man. And so therefore, as a result, we are drawn to the industry. We're drawn to the ideals and the sophistication and the philosophy of it. However, when it comes down to making the decisions, we revert back to how were we inbred, how were we raised, how were we influenced. And it's from an individualistic society. Me, 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 I am great, I am good, I do this. I will tell you time and time again, I cannot begin to explain the number of times that we've had one single member come to me and make a comment that this doesn't work right for them, and I know that people have spent hours and hours and hours trying to resolve the problem for that one person, to customize it for that one person, instead of stopping and saying, is what their recommendation, is what they're saying, good for the common good of the entire credit union membership, or am I just satisfying this one person who simply is being the squeaky wheel at the moment? And that's a huge piece that's missing in credit unions, because, again, it's that conflict between the individualistic and that collective idea, understanding it, wanting to respond to every unique idea as though we have to, because if I lose one member, it's the end of the world. The bottom line is, do what you do well, stick to your niche, figure out the collective idea, handle it for the group of the many, not for the individual needs of one person, and I believe that that's where credit unions are missing out.
I absolutely agree with you. Hey, folks, listen, there's no doubt in my mind we'll have to do this as a part two next week, Strategic Planning 1993 Part 2. If we can get through the week without another mass shooting, we won't have 8 minutes of that eating up our show. Believe it or not, even though it makes the people up in Madison, Wisconsin very, very happy when I say it, we are out of time. Joining us live from North Carolina, not South Carolina, his name is Tough Talkin' Troy Hall. Hey, Troy, you have a great trip up there in North Carolina.
Thank you. I'm going to get number smart. I'll be able to quote something about the isosceles triangle or something when I'm done. I'll be the scarecrow from the Wizard of Oz, where all of a sudden I'll quote the wrong stuff in the movie. Yes.
Well, I'll tell you what, if you can figure out the isosceles triangle, you're probably way ahead of me, a student who was very, very proud to pull down a D in geometry at Judson High School. So that's a great way to go. Hey, folks.
That's because you thought D stood for dude.
I did. I had no idea what they were talking about.
You had no idea. But, it was really great. You thought D was for dude.
Hey, folks. If it's Wednesday, it's the Power Performance, the show that asks the question, if your brand were a band, would you leave the audience wanting more? We're going to get back to this. I'm fascinated by the things that happened in the past that impact our present and help us plan for the future. If you want to find out how to go confidently into that future, I want to encourage you to visit our sponsor, Marquee, gomarquee.com, where we had the opportunity to broadcast the show from last week. Jump out there to gomarquee.com, GOMARQUIS. Go get that free book, Marketing Execution, a great, great book about how to execute your marketing plan, whether it's today or 1993 or 2003. Choi jokes a lot. He's nowhere near 70. And if you ever meet this guy, he's probably in better shape than a lot of your 20 and 30-year-old employees. Hey, Troy, blessings on your week. Can't wait to do it all again next Wednesday. Hey, folks, until next we speak, go out there, make it a great week. Be the person you were in the interview and be in business forever. We'll talk to you soon.